This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to The Informer. Dean Beck with you for the last time in my final edition of The Informer. Tonight we'll speak to Sam Hibbins, Greens member for Paran, who suggests equality law reform in the state of Victoria has stalled. And following the startling revelations earlier this week in the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse, we'll speak to Fiona Patton, MLC for the Northern Region. And a trigger warning for you, tonight's edition of The Informer will have conversations that detail the Royal Commission and child sex abuse. So please, if this is not to your liking, perhaps turn away. In a recent opinion piece that appeared in Star Observer, Sam Hibbins, who is the state member for Paran and a member of the Greens Party, suggests that Victoria's equality has stalled. Law reform has hit a roadblock. Sam Hibbins joins us on The Informer. Sam, thank you for making yourself available today.
Thanks for having me.
What do you mean? What is the roadblock that you're referring to?
Well, what's occurred in the state upper house there is a block of 21 votes, which is enough to stymie legislation. And a block made up of Liberals, Nationals, Shooters and Fishers and other Conservative crossbenchers. They joined together last year to block a bill that would have given self-determined sex markers on birth certificates. And this grouping essentially now threatens any future LGBTI equality law reform in Victoria. This is a real issue. It's unfortunate, and I would have thought that the Liberal Party would have adopted a more progressive stance on these issues. Unfortunately, they haven't. I feel they've regressed in this term of Parliament. But what I'd also urge is there is still 2 years of this Parliament left. We don't know what the Parliament's going to be like in the next years after the next election. So it's really important that we don't lose hope and we make sure that we keep fighting the good fight for equality in this state.
Are there any pivotal bills before Parliament that are going to come up in the very near future that we should be watching?
I feel there's probably nothing on the government's agenda at this moment. I'm always on the lookout, as I was last year when I put forward my Equality for Students bill. I'm always on the lookout for chances to move private members' bills. But given that the self-determined marker on birth certificates was voted down, I think that needs to be revisited. We've still got the discriminatory exemptions in the Equal Opportunity Act. They need to be removed. So there's still work to be done in this term of Parliament.
Now, you blamed the Australian Sex Party for this particular situation. Why so?
Well, their preferences... Well, look, I'm not levelling the blame completely at the Australian Sex Party, but the fact is that their preferences did get James Purcell over the line in Western Victoria. He has been one of the most socially conservative MPs. I think he's even refused to essentially meet with advocates and stakeholders in this area. So that's been disappointing. I would have much preferred to see the Greens Member of Parliament in his place, which would have occurred had the Sex Party preferenced us. And we would have been seeing more action on equality. We've seen the previous bills last year pass, and we could see further action.
We've achieved so much in this state insofar as equality, and we've seen so much work being done by our Commissioner for Sexuality and Gender, Rowena Allen, doing tremendous work in this space. There's going to be a statewide rollout of the Equality Roadshow. These are all tremendous advancements for equality, but it doesn't change the state of play insofar as the laws are concerned.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. So you've got the machinery of government, you've got the general public, you've got the community out there all moving in this one direction, pursuing equality. Yet you've got this roadblock in the Victorian upper house. My feeling is to overcome this, And I've put forward a number of things that I think we can all do. One is to create a platform for better cross-party collaboration. We have a Victorian Parliamentary Friendship Group for LGBTI Victorians, which has been inactive over the last couple of years. It was set up 2 years ago, but it's essentially been inactive since then. I think that would really be a powerful tool to bring the parties together and all MPs together in a non-political environment to thrash out some of these issues and to inform MPs. And I've also taken part in reaching out to those multicultural and multi-faith communities, many of whom are very much in support of equality and are sick and tired of being portrayed as being against equality or inherently opposed to equality. And that's what the opponents of equality seem to portray these communities as faith-based communities and multicultural communities as inherently opposed to equality, and that simply isn't the case.
Yes, there are a lot of Christians out there who are a little bit fed up with being portrayed as the Antichrist, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, we constantly hear it's a real frustration that we're constantly hearing from the Rent-A-Quote organisation, the ACL, who don't speak on behalf of all Christians. Yet somehow they're given, I feel, an inordinate amount of airtime and column inches when really there is, I feel, a real strong movement with an organised religion to embrace equality.
Sam Hebbins, are these parliamentary friendship groups more than just a warm, fuzzy talk fest? Do they actually achieve anything?
Well, I think if you look at the parliamentary friendship group at a federal level, I think that's been a real powerful tool in progressing these issues, and we know that there are members from all sides of politics as part of that friendship group that are doing the work within Parliament and within their own party to progress equality. So I really feel that this friendship group model will really work to bring all parties together to discuss these issues.
State Member for Paran and Greens Party LGBTI spokesperson Sam Hebbins, thanks for joining us on The Informer tonight.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, joining us now is the Northern Metro member in the Legislative Council, Fiona Patten, from the Australian Sex Party. Fiona, thank you for joining us today on The Informer.
Thank you, Dean. Sorry to hear it's the last show.
Last show for me, anyway. The Informer will continue, but my last Informer. Now, Fiona, Sam Hebbins made it pretty clear there that it was your preferences that have led to this this roadblock for equality. would you like the right of reply?
Well, look, I find it remarkable because the Greens are usually taking credit for things that they haven't done. But this time, I mean, they preference James Purcell well above the Sex Party. They preference James Purcell well above where we preference him. I would have loved to have seen a Sex Party member in the West. We had a great candidate, and I would have loved to have seen them be elected. I think it's completely fatuous that he would suggest that. And apart from that, I worked tirelessly. Poor old James Purcell, who is actually a very decent bloke, and despite Sam's labelling him as a conservative, he voted for my amendment to expand the medicinal cannabis program, which the Greens voted against. James has indicated he will vote for the medically supervised injecting centre trial that I'm proposing in 2 weeks. He has voted with me on numerous times when the Greens have voted against me. And yes, we didn't get him across the line on this, on the issue of birth certificates, and I was gutted by that. But I spoke to James endlessly about this. I tried to introduce him to people in his community. I talked to him, but I didn't. The Greens did not pick up the phone. The Greens did not speak to James once. So I think it's rather rich of them to take this position. You know, lobbying and working in this Parliament does not stop when you're elected. I guess because I've been a lobbyist for so long, I understand that what you've got to do is once you get in, that's when the real work
starts. That's when the work starts.
That's right.
You've been getting quite a bit of traction with your medically assisted injecting rooms. Have the Greens got a position on that?
Yes, they have. They invented it.
Ah, right, okay.
And actually it's their bill. I didn't realise that until I read Adam Bandt's website and Ellen Sandel and Kathleen Watson's. But I don't know what I was thinking when I was giving that second reading speech today, because it wasn't my bill, it was the Greens. look, I'm joking, but it does get my goat when, you know, they're now putting out petitions to the ALP to introduce the safe injection room without any mention of the fact that there is a bill before Parliament. but look, you know, moving on, the Greens do have a great policy on this, and they are very supportive of a medically supervised injection centre. They just didn't introduce legislation about it for the last 12 years that they've been in Parliament.
Let's turn our attention to some rather more horrendous matters. In 2000, the Eros Association, of which you were once the head of, published a listing of paedophile priests along with their modus operandi in a book called Hypocrites. And it became the focus of a Four Corners program, which kick-started the media's attention into the scrutiny on child sexual abuse in the church. Earlier this week, the Royal Commission into Institutionalised Sex Abuse Against Children released startling data as to the extent to which it featured in the Catholic Church. Let's just take a listen to this little grab from 7:30.
It culminated with a groundbreaking report by the Child Abuse Royal Commission, which demonstrated for the first time the breathtaking numbers of children betrayed by the church.
Between January 1980 and February 2015, 4,444 people alleged incidents of child sexual abuse.
It found a shocking 7% of priests had sexual abuse complaints against them. Pope Francis had previously estimated the worldwide percentage of paedophile priests at 2%. The Archdiocese of Melbourne had the most priests who had claims against them. 70 men of the cloth were accused of sexually harming children between 1950 and 2010. That's 8.1%. Across the country, the statistics for religious brothers were even more alarming.
22% of Christian brothers were alleged perpetrators. 40.4% of St John of God brothers were alleged perpetrators.
These numbers are shocking. They are tragic. And they are indefensible.
Francis Sullivan from the church's Truth, Justice and Healing Council struggled to fight back tears during his speech.
It's pretty profound. And for me, the most shocking day was when all those figures tumbled together and you realised the extent of the abuse and the hypocrisy. Such a hypocritical history.
That audio from ABC 7:30. We're speaking with Fiona Patton, MLC. Fiona, you have really been at the forefront of this for many, many years. You must have been blown away, though, with the startling revelations that came out on Monday.
I was completely blown away. Just even hearing that just brings tears to my eyes about just the number of people that suffered under that church. And I think it was yesterday or the day before, someone from the Catholic Church said they were shocked that there was paedophile grief, so they were shocked by this. And I thought, how the hell can you be shocked when you were the people shunting these paedophile priests around to different parishes so that they could abuse a new lot of children? The 44% of 22% of Christian brothers, 40% of brothers of St John of God. I mean, my goodness, that's like nearly half of all of the priests of that brotherhood were abusing children.
And these offences took place in Cheltenham and in Lilydale. I mean, this is in our backyard.
That's exactly right. And when we raised this with George Pell, and we raised it, as you said, with the Four Corners, and he was saying, oh, they're just trying to deflect from the evil work that the adult industry does.
Your exa- you know,
I mean, it was...
The executive summary that was attached to your publication, Hypocrites, in 2000, reads as follows. Australia's Christian churches and the sex industry both employ approximately 20,000 people. Since 1990, the courts have acknowledged 450 child sexual assaults against employers of the church, none against the sex industry. That was in the year 2000. And we now know that the extent of that was far, far greater than the 450 that you quoted.
And maybe we should have pushed it harder. We felt strongly about it. We put that book out. We sent that book to every single member of parliament, state and federal in Australia. We actually sent it to every church in Australia. And we got hate mail. We got death threats. We had... we had a lot of people returning it saying, don't be preposterous, this is just vile, vile accusations. And, I now sort of feel bad that I didn't pursue it even further. But people were coming down. I mean, we were getting doors closed on us in Parliament. I would come into Parliament and, probably none of the current members that I work with now... did this, but there was a number of members who refused to see me because of that booklet.
That booklet detailed...
they refused to believe it.
That booklet detailed the names of many priests, brothers, etc., and their alleged perpetrations against children.
Well, this wasn't even alleged. These were the ones that were actually caught and prosecuted. No, we didn't even start on the allegations.
You called for a Royal Commission back in 2000.
Yeah. When
the Royal Commission was finally enacted, our government agreed to... it became very clear very early on that it needed to be extended, and it still remains active today, continuing to do the work that it's doing. We're talking just about the Catholic Church in this particular instance. We're not talking about other denominations.
That's right. We haven't even started with the Salvation Army that readily admits that they covered up sexual abuse allegations. I think we've had Jehovah's Witnesses saying the same thing, Seventh Day Adventists saying the same thing, Scientologists saying the same thing, Anglicans as well. This was somehow, and we need to address this, it's this sense of privilege that religious organisations feel that they have in society. And it's that sense of privilege that let them cover up, 4,444 allegations of child sexual assault against young children in Australia. That sense of privilege has to go. And I think, one of our policies is around making those churches don't pay tax. They don't even have to register. So they are shrouded in, their finances are shrouded in secrecy. Their operations are still shrouded in secrecy. And no one wants to question them. Well, we need to question them. They need to be far more transparent from now on. I don't think that promoting religion should be a tax-exempt activity, because they do not deserve that type of luxury and that type of sense of entitlement anymore. They've lost that.
Throughout this period, the Catholic Church in particular spread vile vitriol against the gay community. Do you see that as a smokescreen or, some sort of some way of making, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I know. That's absolutely right. I mean, the vile thing that, former Archbishop, Cardinal Pell, as we call him now, Cardinal Pell said against the gay and lesbian community was, was it fear? Was it fear of being exposed? Was it fear that they would just protest too much? Was it this sort of... It was frightening, their homophobia. In some sense, they weren't beyond blaming pedophilia on the gay community.
Oh, absolutely
and
not.
Yet they were the perpetrators. I think when you look at places like Ireland, where they've recently embraced same-sex marriage, this played a part. This played a part.
How much...
You know, Ireland lost their faith in their church because of this.
It destroyed many, you know, elderly women who had devoted their life and their family to the church. Absolutely destroyed
them. That's right.
Do you think that there is a role or a need for celibacy to be addressed? Do you think this is part of the problem?
Oh, personally, I think religion is part of the problem. The sense of entitlement, and yes, I mean, celibacy seems to be a completely unnatural act, but I also think probably the whole Catholic Church is an unnatural act, personally. But you know, when you've got, they still carry far more weight than they should in the hallowed halls of Parliament. I saw a cluster of them waiting to see a few ministers yesterday in the parliamentary foyer. Now, they will go in and they will extol things. And, you know, when we were looking at the voluntary assisted dying legislation, it was, their voice was given considerable force and considerable weight in our reporting. We find that regularly, that their voice is given far more weight than other people. And this has got to change. And I would hope that the fact that they have hidden and deceived the community over child sexual assault should mean that their days are numbered as a respected part of our community.
There seems to be little support for those who have had crimes perpetrated against them. We constantly are hearing stories of very little being done for these people.
That's right. And there is this church telling us that... you know, we shouldn't have same-sex marriage because it will harm children. You know, how dare they? And yet, certainly in New South Wales, and to give credit to the Greens, which I'd love to see that debated one day, but to give credit to the Greens, a Greens MP in New South Wales introduced legislation to ensure that the church not hide behind property trust in paying compensation to some of the victims. And this was probably 10 years ago, and it was very good legislation, and I thoroughly applaud the member for doing that because the Catholic Church at that time, when a victim was asking for compensation, the church said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have any money. What do you mean money? I mean, we own some buildings, we own half of Sydney, and we receive billions of dollars in government grants. Which we don't pay any tax on and we don't have to account for. But no, we don't have money to pay the victims. And John Key, rest his soul, was successful in getting in forcing the church to be slightly more transparent in that jurisdiction.
There's a nice little property up on the top of the hill next to where you are at the moment that could go some way to compensate these people.
Absolutely. There's actually a few in Collins Street, a few in Monsdale Street, in fact, even Little Collins Street North,
Fiona Patton.
Religious properties.
Fiona Patton, MLC, thank you very much for joining me on my final edition of The Informer.
Thank you, Dean. We love you.
Fiona Patton, the member for Northern Metro, joining us on The Informer there. And if this conversation has upset you in any way, if you need to reach out to someone or you know someone that needs help, Lifeline is there for you 24/7. 13 11 14 is their number. That's 13 11 14. Men's Line Australia is 1300 789 978. And you can, of course, contact Beyond Blue at beyondblue.org.au. My name is Dean Beck. It's been a delight to be with you over the years of On the Line and The Informer in its new incarnation. It will continue to go from strength to strength. Thank you very much for your support over the years, and continue to listen to Australia's one and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.